This episode is brought to you by Skinny Pop Popcorn. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Oh, so light and crunchy. Skinny Pop Original Popcorn is the snack you've been searching for. Made with just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn kernels, sunflower oil, and salt. Snacking never felt or tasted so good. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Give yourself permission to snack and pick up Skinny Pop Original Popcorn today.
Maybe it's just that you don't know how to use social courtesy.
Oh, that's old fashioned.
Watch how
Lizzie Post
and Dan Post
act as host and hostess. They know that courtesy means showing respect, thinking of the other person, real friendliness.
Hello!
And welcome to Awesome Etiquette,
where we explore modern etiquette through the lens of consideration, respect, and honesty.
On today's show, we take your questions on Easter traditions that change without warning, when to use titles and when not to as you get older, how to handle registries you aren't fond of.
For community members, your question of the week is about food that's too hot. Do you have to eat it?
Plus your etiquette salute and a postscript on our favorite things about Emily Post.
All that's coming up.
Awesome Etiquette comes to you from the studios of our home offices in Vermont and is proud to be produced by the Emily Post Institute. I'm Dan Post-Senning.
And I'm Lizzie Post. Cuz, it's good to be with you on the mic in this new era.
It is, in this post-eclipse era.
I was going to say, there's only one thing I want to talk about in this intro. It has very little to do with etiquette. The eclipse was amazing.
Okay, how surprised were you? I was surprised at how unprepared I was for what the actual experience of it was like. I had done no reading. I had no idea.
You had no idea. So I had some idea of like what was going to happen, that there'd be the point of totality. If you're in the path of totality, is the one where you can actually take off your glasses and safely look at the eclipse through just your eyes.
Yeah.
So if you're in the path of totality, the point where you can actually take your glasses off, your protective eyewear off, and look at the eclipse is only when the moon is directly in front of the sun and you have that full totality. And what happens during that time, and it lasts depending on where you are on the path, for different amounts. We had about 3.5 minutes in Burlington, which was pretty exciting. And when it hits that point, the entire really bright part of the sun is covered, but what's called the corona, word we're all so familiar with now, is glowing around the blocked out portion of the sun that's blocked out by the moon. And it's absolutely glorious. The thing that surprised me so much, Dan, was that all the photos I've ever seen, the sky is black, the center of the sun is black, and there's like a yellow ring around the sun. That is not what it looked like to my eyes. And I understand eyes perceive color differently. Everything was silvery to my eyes. The sky was a deep, deep dark silver, and it did feel like nighttime. It was like a bright night out. Like if you had a full moon, it was like that kind of nighttime where I was in Burlington. And then it was just this silvery bluish ring around that blacked out portion of the sun that is where the moon is crossing in front of it. But I had no idea I was going to cry. I didn't want to talk. I just wanted to be in awe. It was awe inspiring. That's what I don't know for you, but I cried because I cried.
I didn't cry, but I could see it having that effect on you. I found it really moving, really affecting. No question. And I was not expecting that 3.5 minutes. I was expecting that moment to be a moment. There's an hour of the sun shadow or the moon shadow crawling, or I guess it's the earth shadow crawling across the sun. And I thought there would be a moment where like a little bit like when the sun dips behind the horizon at sunset. You know, there's that when you catch the last ray and then it disappears. And I was looking for a moment like that. And then all of a sudden I'm living in the moment, and it just kept going. And like you say, the glasses can come off. And in fact, if you leave them on, you're in
pitch
blackness.
You can't see anything.
It really was amazing. And like you, the quality of the light is the thing that was really standing out to me. I had been expecting a little bit like that sunset moment, the quality of the light to be kind of golden hour, the way at the end of the day at dusk, the light changes, it gets darker, but the light changes also. It got darker, but it was the quality of that light change that was so surprising to me. And I was saying to Pooja, I feel like I'm in the movie Gladiator, where they did that super high def and like the funny lenses, but it had a sort of an ultra crispness to it. And well, I felt like I was living in that experience. Something about the quality of the light gave everything this contrast that made it pop.
The ultra contrast is true. One of the other things that you can notice during a solar eclipse is that the shadows get very defined. They don't have those soft edges to them. They are extraordinarily crisp. And that was something so I watched with my neighbors, Carl and Linda and Corey, and it was really fun. They brought out some cheese and crackers. I went through the gate to their yard.
So there's a little eclipse etiquette going on here.
There is a little eclipse etiquette there. And I love that all my neighbors were out. It felt kind of like a pandemic block party, I'll be honest, because everyone was kind of in their own yard. Yeah. But we were all out doing it. Like, you'd hear everyone, ooh, look at it now, you know, that kind of a thing. But you are right. Things would have looked sharper. Everything would have been a little bit sharper, especially those shadows, which was really cool. It was like the 3.5 minutes was glorious. It was wonderful that it lasted that long. I thought people were nuts for coming up to Vermont to spend in money and everything that comes. I now could totally see myself chasing an eclipse. I want to do this
within
again.
A drive. Absolutely.
I was so sad my dad wasn't here for it because don't worry, he's alive. I've said that and a couple people have been worried, but he's such a space geek. He would have loved this
so much.
I honestly would love to plan something to get him to the next one. But it really was magic. One of those things I was very glad to have experienced. Dan, one of the cool things was we had VPR playing and they were doing a local live event, I think in St. Johnsbury, and they were kind of ticking off as like Burlington should be in totality now. And you know, everybody's silent in Burlington at that point, but you hear the wave as they cross. And when the totality hit St. Johnsbury and you listen, I'm getting teared up just talking about it. Aww. And you listen to it hit like Jane Lindholm and I forget who was with her. He's the guy that does our night sky stuff, but it was so amazing to hear the silence wash over them. And their experience of it, what you had just lived through, and hearing them say like, oh, I'm getting teared up and it's so amazing. It's more awe-inspiring I thought it would be. Like, what is this that's happening? It is just amazing. It was really amazing. So I just, it was so, so cool. I don't know how to stop talking about it because.
I'm so glad you want to. I was thinking about it all week and wanting to talk about it at this intro. You were listening to VPR. I was listening to our 500th episode.
Ah, yeah. Good on you.
it was the day that our 500th episode came out. And I had obviously heard the parts that you and I had recorded, but I had saved a lot of the listener and family and friend shout outs as a surprise for myself when the show aired. So I had listened to it once and I found myself wanting to listen to it again because of all of those very familiar and friendly voices. Yeah. But it felt like a special time to be listening to that show. And yeah. And so I was thinking about awesome etiquette as this was all happening. It was sort of connected to that day in some way. So I extra wanted to talk eclipse today on episode 501.
Totally, totally. Well, speaking of, it was so much fun celebrating episode 500 with everyone. We have loved all the responses that have come in from the giveaways, and those winners' prizes are on their way to their destinations. We really want to thank everybody for their participation. This is our new era, and the show is going to sound a little bit different today. One of those differences is that at the end of our intro, we are going to allow a little bit of time for some EPI announcements. And this week's announcement is just that our giveaway period has officially ended as of Friday the 12th at 9 p.m. and winners are being selected and prizes are being sent out. And we just want to say thank you to everyone who participated. It was so much fun seeing the answers come in and seeing everyone engage with those giveaways. So thank you all for that.
Well, Lizzie Bost, I am eager to get started with this next era of awesome etiquette. And we do have a great show today. Our postscript will be about our memories of Emily Post. And we have a salute from listener and contest winner, Dory. But first, let's get to your questions.
Let's do it.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin.
Dan, I'm so glad they've stuck with us. I converted. Like, this is my product now. It is my everyday moisturizer because it's so stinking easy. And it's not stinking. It smells great. But it really is easy. And I believe the science behind the product. So I ended up subscribing so that I could get it on a regular basis. If you want smart, easy skincare, I think OneSkin is the solution.
And if you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements, free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the SkinSafe seal of approval.
For a limited time, you can try OneSkin for 15% off using the code MANNERS, that's MANNERS with an S, when you check out at oneskin.co. Give your skin the scientifically proven gentle care it deserves with OneSkin.
Leveraging their in-house cutting-edge R&D platform, they were able to measure the efficacy of age-reversal molecules in their lab. By staining skin samples in the lab for senescent cells and analyzing changes to the skin's genetic data before and after exposure to the OS01 peptide, OneSkin scientists found that the OS01 peptide reverses skin's biological age by reducing the number of senescent cells by up to 50%.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code MANNERS at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with the code MANNERS. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support this show and tell them we sent you.
Now, back to awesome etiquette.
Do it. There's no show without you. You can be just like these awesome folks by sending your next etiquette question to our brand new email address. We've made it easier. You no longer have to spell etiquette. Send your questions to ae@emilypost.com. You can also leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. On Substack, you can post your question in the comment thread for our Monday podcast post. Simply go to emilypost.substack.com. You can also DM us on Instagram. We are at Emily Post Institute.
Our first question this week is titled Egg Hunt Interlopers. I have a slightly convoluted question about hosting etiquette. I live on a street with a close sense of neighborhood camaraderie and community. We host several neighborhood events throughout the year. Some, like 4th of July, are larger events and are open to all of our individual friends and families as big public events. Others are smaller affairs, meant to be neighbor-only gatherings. Easter used to be one of our smaller events. A neighbor on the street would volunteer to be the host house, the house where everyone would meet for a potluck and socializing before a street-wide egg hunt for the kids. Other neighbors would volunteer their lawns as designated egg hunting spots, and we would stuff eggs with prizes for the kids and then hide them in our yards. This allowed the kids on our street to go house to house hunting for eggs. This was always a closed neighborhood event until recently. Last year, the host house took it upon themselves to invite 50-plus personal friends to attend the neighborhood potluck and community egg hunt. They did this unbeknownst to the neighbors, and I was surprised to find so many strangers at our Easter celebration the day of the event. I thought maybe it was a one-off for the host house, but this year they did it again. I'm offended that the host house asks other houses to volunteer to stuff eggs and hide them in our yard so that their personal friends with kids can collect them from our lawns. I was under the impression that this was a small event limited to only kids that live on our street. Would it not be proper etiquette to host your own personal Easter gathering and ask if other neighbors want to participate in their party? Alternatively, shouldn't the approach be to let everyone invite their own guests to the egg hunt? I have several friends with kids who would love to come to our neighborhood egg hunt, but I don't invite them out of respect to our other neighbors. Why is only the host house allowed to invite guests when we are all collectively as a street providing for the party? Mm-hmm. And why are they doing it without notification to the neighbors? For further clarification, the verbiage on the invite specifies that this is a neighborhood event. I've attached the invitation for review. Am I completely off base on this? Please let me know what proper etiquette is for this type of situation. Thank you. Frustrated neighbor.
Oh, frustrated neighbor. I hear you. I feel the frustration. In listening to this, if it had happened to me, I probably would have been a little like, whoa, what? Like, it would take me aback. Especially because it sounds like the neighborhood had sort of an MO for approaching this holiday. And this one hosting house has turned and really changed that MO without talking to the folks who participated traditionally in the event. And especially because it's a potluck, and even though there is one house hosting, I think it's very much so a neighborhood community event and feel. And Dan, that gives me a lot of hope for moving in the direction of asking questions, and maybe not exactly the questions that were posed, but similar ones, in a group setting of for these hosts, and not just the hosts in terms of the folks who actually hosted this particular 2 year or these particular 2 years and did 50 extra guests, but all the hosts. It sounded like to my ears that the way this had been going was that that host house would rotate a bit based on who had the time and the willingness to really be the kind of main house hosting the event, the one where the food and the gathering occurs. And part of me wonders, because it sounded to me, Dan, like the host house that invited the 50 people did it 2 years in a row, that it might be just this particular set of hosts that feel comfortable inviting way beyond the neighborhood. If it was two different hosts, one had seen the previous year do it and said, oh, we'll do that at ours. That was great. You know, no matter what, no matter which, whether it's the same host house doing it 2 years in a row or it's two different host house now having exhibited this particular type of organization, I think I would try, in preparation for next year or maybe even for the next big event, to say, hey, I just wondered if we could all get on a call or meet over at my house for some, you know, tea and cookies to talk about how we've been hosting. I noticed some changes and I didn't want to do the wrong thing. And I wanted to talk to people about how they felt about things. Would you all be willing to join up for a conversation about some of these really awesome neighborhood events that we've had over the years? Because I think that frustrated neighbor gives you an opportunity to talk about how you experience this, and not so much so that, because your perspective is the perspective that will rule them all, but because I think it's worth doing something like this, sort of like a committee meeting, when you have these types of group events that are organized. One thing that really struck out to me in terms of, would you have been offended, you know, when they're asking us, Dan, how we look at this situation, I think the 50 plus people is a little much, I'll be honest. I think that when you have a group who are participating in a potluck, not informing them that the guest list has now doubled or tripled, I don't know how big it was to begin with, but it's added 50 people to it, that changes my mind in terms of what I can bring. When I add to it that it's 50 strangers, people I really don't know, not just another 50 neighbors further down the street, I start to feel a little bit more aggrieved personally, where I'm like, hey, I would appreciate a heads up. And that could be another way to approach this, Dan, is to talk to the hosting family who has a tendency to invite these 50 extra people and say, I'll admit I was a little caught off guard by this, because previously we'd always done it this way. And I was really expecting that number of people and all kind of familiar faces. And this really felt different when it got handled this way. And I want to know kind of what the expectations are. If we host, are we really expected to be doing, you know, egg hunts for kids, for 50 plus kids now, as opposed to the 20 that it was before? It starts to, for me, it threw things out of balance. And I didn't feel the same level of sort of neighborhood camaraderie that I had in the past. I think starting to talk that stuff out will help you get to a better solution for the future. But Dan, I liked some of the other stuff that was brought up at the end here. You know, would I be able to invite my friends from not in the neighborhood to come participate? That might make it feel better to me. Or if we're going to change it, I could see us changing it in a way that allows everyone to invite some extra guests. Worth discussing, in my opinion.
I love keeping those thoughts in mind as you approach that discussion, because to me, it's having that kind of an open perspective and being open to those different possibilities and different solutions mm-hmm. that helps that conversation feel less like an explanation of why I'm aggrieved and what you did wrong, and turns it into the possibility of more of a question yeah. of this happened. I didn't feel great about it. I'm thinking about next year and wanting to feel better next year at the same time. And having a couple of different ways that that might happen, I think is wise, because as we often talk about on this show, you're not necessarily going to be able to control what other people think or how other people would like to proceed. And it sounds like this is a real neighborhood with a real sense of camaraderie. I love that word.
Yeah.
And you might not want to keep the final option that I often like to offer or keep in my own pocket in these situations of just saying, well, if it's not done in a way that I can feel good about, I won't participate.
Yeah.
I'll just remove my house and my lawn from the option. And you might not want to do that. You might not want to be, as we walk down the street, well, there's this house, oh, stay off their yard. Okay, this house. And you might. That might be completely fine, and that's certainly your prerogative. Lizzie, when you said 50 sounds like an awful lot to me, I was thinking one person sounds like a lot to me if I don't expect them on my property, and then they're right? on my property.
Oh, good point, Dan. Good point.
That was the real concrete line for me that said that the host had failed in some way here, that there was an impact on other people. And even if they were doing the majority of the hosting, it was their home, and they'd prepared to accommodate that many more people, and they had enough eggs to go everywhere for the increased number. When you're sending people out, or when part of the event is that group of people spending time on other people's property, to me, there would be a baseline expectation that you would let people know if it was going to be a really different kind of event, or if there were a bunch of people coming that someone didn't know who they might find on their property that particular day.
No, absolutely. I think the surprise of the extra folks and having it be that many extra folks is totally fair to have been surprised by, you know. One thing I might just caution against is the tendency or the desire, and I say this because it's what I would do in this particular situation. I don't think it's my best move all the time to kind of go neighbor to neighbor and saying, hey, I didn't really love how that went. Did you not really love how that went too? And try to kind of get the whole buy-in before you approach the host. I like the idea of kind of calling the group together who really organizes this and talking about it openly in front of them, rather than doing the like house to house buy-in of the aggrievedness before you. And there's some temperature taking that can be really helpful in these circumstances. But consider us one of the temperatures you're taking too. And my advice would be go for talking to that whole group about it. It's funny, Dan, I go back and forth as to whether just talking to the host directly would be less impactful, more impactful, sound more like a complaint. You know what I mean? There's something about getting the group that organizes this together that I'm really leaning in towards as a solution for tackling the problem.
I like your caution about not turning into the neighborhood gossip. And I could see a lot of different ways that conversation could happen. I hadn't thought of the neighborhood committee side of it when you first said that. I was saying to myself, boy, that sounds awful formal. But if there are other events that really are town events and they are bigger public events, there might be a structure that can contain this and hold it.
I didn't mean it quite that seriously. Sorry. I didn't mean to put it that way. But you're right, that Dan, that's a good thought too. I hadn't thought of that. I was thinking more of this little cul-de-sac of people who probably get together to do this Easter event or the July 4th event, but totally.
And I'm guessing there's a Rotarian on that street, or somebody that works in the mayor's office, or there is a street in Waterbury that functions like this. I thought this question might have come from Randall Street in Waterbury, Vermont,
okay,
when we first received it.
Okay.
They block the street off, and there's trick-or-treating there on Halloween, and the houses put out decorations, and they bring extra candy, and it's a big thing. And I was wondering if an Easter thing that had happened maybe privately on that street had gotten out into the town.
I
could just totally see this happening in my hometown. And again, if the street is like that, there really might be a social container that could hold this new party. Mm. Well, it sounds like Easter is starting to be like our Halloween, or Easter is starting to be like our 4th of July, and maybe we could approach it that way and organize it better. That idea hadn't been in my mind as much. Mm-hmm. I had been thinking much more about the neighborly approach. Just touching base, saying, hey, I would have liked to have known, if possible. And
that's
and
what I was envisioning.
Over-inflating the concern or the issue, but letting someone know that it had caught you off guard. And given the current situation, if you didn't want to raise an issue that you had in the past, if you just wanted to say, let me control what I can control, I think it's reasonable to ask if you could invite a couple people at this stage. If it's happened 1 year and now 2 years in a row, rather than go back and address the 2-year-old affront, you might say, you know, I'm just going to see if the same liberty applies to me here. And that would maybe help me feel a little better about it.
I like that idea too.
Either way, next year I'd touch base early and get involved in the discussion to give everybody the best possible chance to know what's going on. Frustrated neighbor, thank you so much for the question. We really hope that next year, when spring comes, you're feeling a little less frustrated.
So the work in Richard's community goes on day after day, night after night. People working for each other, depending on each other. All of them partners in making their community a better place in which to live.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA Auto Insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Our next question is titled, When to Ditch the Mister? And Dan, I like the fact that this is the second time we've had a question like this in the past like month or two on the show. Hello, Dan and Lizzie. I have been wondering lately about forms of address. I just turned 20 and am gradually adjusting to calling adults by their first names, while realizing, with some discomfort, that my peers and I are also now adults. When it comes to middle-aged adults who are single, I'm comfortable calling them by their first names. Even when it comes to older persons who are widowed, I feel comfortable calling them by their first names. But for some reason, when it comes to middle-aged adults with children, I feel really odd calling them by their first names. I'm not really sure why I pause when it comes to this particular group. And then there are just random persons who I feel hesitant to call by their first names, and I have no idea why. It just feels incredibly awkward. Sometimes, too, at a course or in class, other students call instructors by their first name. While I feel like I should address them as Mr. or Ms. or Doctor, I feel like using titles can be offensive because they might make those I'm talking to feel old, but then I feel like not using them can be seen as disrespectful. Is there ever a time I should still address people with titles? Should age gaps be taken into consideration, or should all adults call each other by their first names? Thanks for your time, Mitzi.
Mitzi, thank you so much for the question. And yes, Lizzie Pose, this is our second titles and forms of address question to come from, I'm not going to call it Gen Alpha, but just the someone in their 20s. And yeah. I just love it. I love being able to answer this question. I love being able to tell people, I really enjoy it when people call me Sir or Mr. Senning. And I don't know exactly why, but there is something about it that seems respectful, and I enjoy mm-hmm. it. And I wouldn't want people to feel like they had to, and that it was required of them all the time. I think one of the things that makes it so appealing to me is it's a choice that mm-hmm. I hear people make. And precisely because it's a choice and it's an honorific, it's a form of respect that you show someone, or it can be seen that way. To me, it gives me a little bit of pleasure. And I would encourage you to continue doing the things that you feel good about doing, the things that make sense to you, that come naturally to you, until someone tells you otherwise. The golden rule for what we call people or how we address people is that we try to honor and respect the wishes of the person who we're addressing. So I think it's a good idea to think broadly about how we approach these things and to figure out the approaches that make us most comfortable. And also at the same time, keeping in mind that if someone says, oh, please don't call me sir, that makes me feel like my father, that you're comfortable letting go of that and addressing them the way they'd like to be addressed.
Dan, what I find interesting about Mitzi's question is the divide. It wasn't even married folks in their middle age that got the titles, but parents. Adults who have children. And I thought that that was an interesting one. Mitzi, Dan and I can't really do anything to make you feel better about it other than to tell you that it really, if you want to be practicing formality in your life, then leading with the title and last name when you meet someone is perfectly appropriate. And as Dan says, once they tell you to please call me this, that, or the other, then you can move forward with confidence knowing that you've been invited to use a first name or a nickname even. And that certainly would be the etiquette for it. But there's a lot of times where we get introduced to people just with, I just met a new neighbor. I only know his first name. I just said his first name and that was it. And it's so common nowadays that in casual everyday introductions that we receive only someone's first name. We don't even have a last name to work with. And while there are structures like saying Mr. Jeff or Miss, we bring Miss back, which technically is a term you wouldn't use for any woman over 18, but we've often brought it back as a friendly formality, an informal version of formality. Formality, if you will, to address adults that we are close with in our lives. Lots of kids today now call their teachers, you know, Miss Sarah or, like we said, Mr. Jeff. And it's an interesting construct. I would not move to doing that in lieu of having someone's last name and your desire to potentially still use titles. If someone has introduced themselves to you with a first name, I would feel confident moving forward just using their first name. It's what they've been asked to be called. And for someone who doesn't appreciate titles, it could even be their way of sort of buffering against being called with a title, you know, having someone call them a name with a title. So if you're getting that first name or even the first and last name together, but without having been introduced to someone as like Mr. Senning, for instance, I would feel very confident moving ahead with their first name. And I wouldn't even worry as much, and this is a little bit of a danger zone that I'm getting into here, about age being the issue. I still do like the idea, and even in my 20s, Dan, I remember really trying hard to give that deference and that respect and that formality to folks who were really more than a generation older than me. So, my grandparents or elder aunts and uncles and grandparents, you know, like that, those kind of folks in my life. But for most people today, and I'm just with my cousin, it is fun sometimes to be called like Ms. Post. And, you know, if I get escorted somewhere at like a TV show or something that we're doing, often you'll be referred to that way. And I smile a little bit, cousin. I'm with you. It feels a little nice. It's not a have to. It's not something I insist on, but I get a little bit of pleasure out of it, I admit. But I think for the most part, when you're meeting people and you've been given that first name, just feel very confident using it and not worrying about those titles if you've been given that first name. I could say it for a millionth time if you've been given that first name.
Say it one more time and then I'll say I agree 1,000%. Because I agree 1,000%. Totally. I also really like your idea of friendly formality. My last note on this question is warmly. And you can use titles warmly. Just because you're introducing that formality or that option for formality, it doesn't mean that there has to be a cold or stilted or awkward distance in the interaction. I was thinking also about the age question. I love talking to people a little bit younger than me and using titles. And I think it's a fun choice to make and a way to show respect. I'm trying to think of our last intern at Emily Post.
John Connor.
Mr. Connors. And all of a sudden he looks up and it's there's something a little bit different about it. And it's friendly. I'm not using it to isolate him or to put him up on a pedestal or something. He's an intern here at Emily Post, but just introducing that formality and doing it in a fun way, calling him by a name that he's not used to being called by, is another way to acknowledge the the situation that you're in, the relationship, or to play around with making that connection with someone. So use of titles doesn't necessarily have to be cold. That formality can be something that you inhabit warmly as well. And I think that approaching it that way might make it feel more accessible and like more of an option for more people.
Yeah. Yeah. Mitzi, I really want to thank you for posing this question. Having two of them in recent podcast history is kind of a big deal, because I think it is proof in the pudding that young people do think about formality and they do consider their placement as they grow up and become adults and how they talk to people, how they address people, and what would be most respectful. And I just think that both you and our other listener, Nick, who talked about it, are both just wonderful shining examples of young people who really want to get it right, do well, and interact well as they grow into fully fledged adults. So thank you so much for the question. We really hope our answer helps.
Of course, he does have a special reason for good manners right now, but good manners are comfortable and natural and easy for him now because they're with him all day. All day? Well, let's see.
This episode is brought to you by Skinny Pop Popcorn. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Oh, so light and crunchy. Skinny Pop Original Popcorn is the snack you've been searching for. Made with just 3 simple ingredients, popcorn kernels, sunflower oil, and salt. Snacking never felt or tasted so good. Perfectly popped, endlessly delicious. Give yourself permission to snack and pick up Skinny Pop Original Popcorn today.
Our next question is titled, Newlyweds Seeking Adventure Funds. I recently received an invitation to a cousin's wedding. This is a young couple, upper 20s and second marriage for the groom. The invitation included the following statement. We've now been together for a few years, 4, and we are blessed to say our home needs little more. Instead of things, we seek to find adventure on the married side. So should you choose to go beyond and above, we request some adventure fun. Love. I find asking for money as a gift tacky. Asking for money for their future vacations and adventures is unacceptable to me. The rest of us have to save for vacations and adventures. I would rather see the invite say, no gifts necessary, and they will either receive gifts or money. The better option is to offer to a charity of their choice for donations. What are your thoughts? Also, as a guest who doesn't want to give money, or even let the bride and groom know how much I'm spending, what should I do? Should I just buy a gift they would like or use? Gift cards are not an option either, as they don't need to know how much I'm spending. My budget is private. Again, your thoughts. Anonymous.
I got thoughts, Dan. I have thoughts on this one. I have a number of thoughts on this one. First is that you've heard me on the podcast before say that I've seen some very cute little rhyming signs around people's homes. Things in regards to how a toilet works best or something like that. Requests, they're often bathroom requests, but they've been very cute. I'll tell you, I don't find it very cute to have rhymes like this. I have noticed there is a very big trend when it comes to gifting instructions and instructions about gifting money in particular, that people think it's very cute to rhyme, and that somehow that cuteness it takes away from or mitigates and softens all of the very directional quality of the actual content of the message. Huh. And I find that to be like, frankly, trying to plaster a smile on and put on fake manners to be well-behaved. I'm going to call it out. I'm going to say, I feel this way about this. I apologize to anyone out there who is feeling like crummy listening to my perspective. It is just my perspective, but I really don't like it. I feel like it somehow removes some of the etiquette from the situation, and it tries to do it by rhyming. I will go on to say, Dan, other thoughts, asking for money to help you on adventures or plan a honeymoon, or, you know, if it's a charity, if it's to furnish the house or decorate the new house or something like that. All of these things have become appropriate options for wedding gifts. And it is not uncommon to find registries that have actual physical gifts on them. They have options to donate to charities. They have options to contribute to honey funds, adventures on the honey funds. All that kind of stuff is all really standard practice, common practice today. I had a ton of fun with Dan's honeymoon. Honey Fund. You've heard me talk about that on this show. I think that these are really commonplace options. In regards to the idea of, I don't want to show them how much I'm spending, I don't like this particular suggestion, Anonymous, the best news is you don't have to show them what you are spending, and you don't have to like this particular suggestion, because always the advice, this is the good, good news, when it comes to wedding gifts or any gift for that matter, you can always go off registry. These are just suggestions. If you don't like the suggestion, you get to do your own thing. You go buy that gift. You can buy it at a discount. You could buy it using a gift card of your own that someone gave to you. And you are right. Your budget is completely your business. It's nobody else's business. So if you don't like the way they have set up registries or the types of things they are asking for, feel very confident simply getting a gift that you feel will commemorate this wonderful moment in their lives.
Lizzie Post, thank you for taking the first pass at this one. I must confess, I feel a little awkward because I did exactly this. And
yeah,
I didn't do the cute poem to explain what I was doing. And I was aware that there are a lot of people like Anonymous out there that don't feel particularly good about these kinds of registries or aren't as familiar with them or don't have a fully formed opinion about them. But I knew that there were some people for whom it would be unfamiliar. And I knew there were some people for whom it would be not what they would want to do exactly. And we did a couple of things, we being Pooja and I, to try to account for that when we set up the registry. And I thought I would offer some of those tips just sort of around the edges of this question, because it might help with something like this in the future. And one thing that we did was we really looked around for a honeymoon registry that didn't charge a lot of fees. One thing that a lot of people don't like is the idea of people taking percentages or cuts of their wedding gift on the way to the recipient. Yeah. So figuring out websites that reduced credit card fees to the absolute minimum or websites that didn't take a cut was one thing that we really looked for. Another was we didn't want a lot of advertising on our website. Sometimes these types of services pay for themselves by serving advertising. That was something that Pooja and I didn't want. We thought it would create a very different kind of feel navigating all of our different online wedding information if there was paid advertising on it. And the other thing that we did that I was really glad that we did was we set up a small registry for physical gifts as well, because we knew that some people would prefer to do that. So we looked for some artisanal Vermont gift registries that were things that we really wanted to support and were gifts that we would really like and enjoy. And we also built a small physical gift registry for people that would prefer that. And I hope that by doing those things, we were able to mitigate some of the feeling of, oh, this is a little bit icky or this is a little transactional that I know can come with a money exchange around something like a wedding gift. But I also reminded myself at the time that there are a lot of wedding traditions where giving money is the standard wedding gift, that there are a lot of very traditional environments where money is the most common gift, and giving each other that money in online forums that allow us to personalize it in a little bit found like a modernization or a move into a contemporary space that I was comfortable with and that Pooja and I were both comfortable with. But I'm well aware that people like Anonymous feel like this, and we made every effort that we could to try to accommodate that as well.
Absolutely. Dan, one final thought that I have on this. There is some concern on Anonymous's part about knowing how much Anonymous has spent on the gift. And one thing that is true about a regular registry, even if it's just physical gifts and there's no honey fund, there's no charity version of it or anything like that, the couple would know still in with engaging in a regular registry how much the gifts that they were putting on that registry were worth. One of our pieces of advice is that folks really put a very broad range, like have a number of $5 gifts on that registry, especially if you're going to have all the way up to, you know, like I've seen $1,000 gifts on registries. And to me, it blows my mind a little bit. But if you work in a world or live in a family or socialize in a world where those kinds of price tags are normal, that would be normal to you. It's one of those funny things about registries is that you have kind of always been in this position, if you buy something off the registry, of the person who's receiving it knowing what it cost. And so that it was interesting. I actually hadn't heard someone mention that angle about registries ever. And so it was really, it was interesting point to kind of come up against and think about. And I still maintain that if you were in the position of anonymous and really not liking the idea of the amount that you've spent being in any way available to your recipient, to have them know about it, that it would be perfectly fine for you to go off registry, do your own thing. Handmade gifts are great. If you've got the talent and the skill, they often cost a lot to make, but they're one of those items that in many ways just become mentally priceless. You know what I mean? but I thought it was an interesting angle on the issue and the subject. And the only way I can find to truly get around it is to just go off registry and do your very own thing.
Anonymous, you've got me thinking about my honeymoon and the adventure of going to India with my new bride and meeting her extended family. But we will have to save those stories for some other time. For now, we want to say thank you so much for your question. We really appreciate having the opportunity to talk about these things, and we really hope that our answer helps.
Experience a progressive lens engineered with AI from Essilor, powered by individual measurements of your visual behavior, a lens personalized to you by an Essilor expert. Discover Verilux XR Track and enjoy instantly sharp vision in motion and seamless transitions from near to far. Find your local Essilor expert today at Essilor.com.
It's time for our postscript segment where we dive deeper into a topic of etiquette. And today, it's not exactly a topic of etiquette, but Dan and I wanted to share some of our favorite things about Emily Post, this wonderful woman whose legacy we carry on today and who means so very, very much to us. Dan, are you ready for it?
I am. Where should we begin, Lizzie Post?
I think one that's on the top of both of our lists is Emily's relationship with her father. And that not only was she raised basically an only child, she had a brother who died very, very young and, you know, not past toddler age. And so Emily really grew up on her own with her two parents. And for the era that she grew up in, which was the Gilded Age, she was born in 1872. And so it was really a time where women were, especially women of society, were really just meant to be raised to be good ladies and be able to host well, be assets to their husbands. You know, it was very much so that world. And I think to have a daughter so connected to her father and interested in his work and to share that sort of verve for the subject, I think was really impressive. And I know it made a big impression on both of us growing up and working at Emily Post.
Absolutely. And it made so much sense to me that she was the heir to an intellectual inheritance. Mm-hmm. That she had such a worldly perspective, but also such a keen intelligence about how people interacted and responded to each other. And to me, that is something that comes from experience and experience with different kinds of people in different kinds of situations. And I really see her getting that kind of exposure at a very young age through that relationship with her father. And as you and I got to know more and more about Bruce Price, already knowing the character of Emily Post. I don't know if you felt the same way that I did, but it was almost like I was like rediscovering her, because there were so many aspects of her personality and character that were reflections and were clearly things that she had learned from him or had been modeled for her by her father. I also really appreciated Laura Claridge helping me see some of those connections to her relationship with her mother that weren't quite so apparent, but that relationship with her father really is so striking. It's really remarkable.
I love the stories of her getting to go to the sites that he was visiting, whether it was one of his own architectural sites or friends. And the idea of her playing around, I know one of them was the Statue of Liberty and the base for the statue. And the biography talks about her playing in I forget if it was the head or the what, but there was some piece of it that was, you know, you could actually go inside of it and stuff. And she would play around on that while her dad talked. And that was kind of cool to see her fitting into some of those really big American iconic things like a Statue of Liberty.
Well, you just said big American iconic things, and that is the perfect serving up of the ball over the plate for me to hit on my next mostest favorite thing about Emily Post.
Mostest favorite. Okay.
I love that she took a cross-country road trip in 1914 and wrote a book about it. I just
talk about iconic, right?
It's hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that Emily Bowes might have been the progenitor, the first American to chronicle a cross-country road trip. I mean, you know, you've got the diaries of the Lewis and Clark expedition. That's pre-car. Emily was really one of the first people to drive across this country in a motor car, and I don't think that there was a book written about Edsel Ford's trip that happened right at the same time, or the guy that he was racing against.
It should have really been. Is. They didn't think ahead.
It's just incredible. Emily Post started the tradition that we know sort of it belongs to Jack Kerouac at this point, but she was right there in 1914 with a notebook and a pencil in hand, driving across this great country. And to me, that is just a really, really cool thing.
No, it is. By Motor to the Golden Gate is definitely one of her more impressive works. And it was before all of her work in Etiquette. It came about 4 or 5 years before that. And it's interesting to think about her in that book and having that experience, and then to think of her 10 years later, you know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, because speaking of the Big Book of Etiquette, and I know that's what she was really famous for, I have always been really impressed, intrigued by, found a lot of comfort in the fact that Emily got famous at 50. That her sort of legacy and the thing that she's so well known for that people don't know who she is, but they know her name, is something that she didn't start writing about till she was 48, 49 years old. The book came out when she was 49. She turned 50, like basically during the first 6 months of its launch. And to me, that is so exciting. And she did that as an unmarried woman at this point. She was a divorced woman at that point in her life. And I think it just paints such a interesting and remarkable picture, because I think the stories that our generation gets told about folks from Emily's generation are that women didn't work at all. And you know, women did. They had shops. They participated in lots of ways. But for Emily's sort of societal class, it wasn't the norm. And it was really cool, or at least the stories we got were that it wasn't the norm and that she's a real anomaly. And she's not quite as much of an anomaly, I've learned as I've gotten older. But I just love the idea of thinking about starting a new career, embarking on something, and finding a lot of success at it in the second half of your life as extraordinarily inspirational. And that's something that I really think about quite a lot. That's one I take a lot from.
Yeah, well, we live and operate in a culture that really elevates youth as an ideal attribute. And the idea that your success might come, or that your highest achievement might come not in the flush of youth or as part of your natural inspiration, but as part of the application of a lifetime of work and dedication to something is Yeah, it's something I think that's worth taking some inspiration from, Lizzie Post. Me too. Thinking about the end of Emily's life, there is something else about her that I really treasure, and that was her connection to Martha's Vineyard and Edgartown in particular, and the home that she built there. That for her, it was an incredibly personal connection. She purchased the small cottage initially and worked on expanding it and developing it. She had hoped to do it with her son, who she lost. It ended up becoming sort of a place that brought back memories of him for her. So she felt very personally connected to the place. But it's also where I have my most personal and immediate associations with her. She was my great-great-grandmother, so obviously I never knew her. But getting to spend summers visiting that house and getting to spend summers visiting that house and occasionally crossing paths with my grandfather, who did know her very well and took care of her, and spent a lot of time with her in that house, there are a lot of very immediate connections for me, associations between Martha's Vineyard, the family, and Emily Post. And one of the reasons that's so significant for me is that it speaks to a decision that she made about the quality of her life that I heard about reflected in my grandfather's decision to love and spend time on Martha's Vineyard, that there were other opportunities and other pursuits where you could go and climb the social ladder more quickly or enjoy playing on the social ladder of society. And for our grandfather and for Emily, it was a retreat to a place that let them breathe the fresh air and feel their healthy, full selves and do the things that they loved to do that mattered the most. And I really like thinking about Emily as that kind of person. I think it's why the advice that she gave was so good, is that she was operating from a place of really asking fundamentally important questions, like what makes people happy? What makes people feel good? How do they feel connected? And I feel all those things and associate all those things with Emily Post and Martha's Vineyard. So another just thing about Emily is Martha's Vineyard in my mind anyway.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to tell you, don't take all the credit there, because I spent a lot of time in that house and enjoyed that connection. And it's real when you grew up around her stuff. I mean, we ate in the dining room of that house at her table that she painted blue. It, you know, the wallpaper was wallpaper she had chosen. It was the couch she had bought. Okay, the very cool coffee table that is filled with all different, like, sea creatures and things, like, that have either dried out, you know, little starfish and conch shells and stuff, that was very cool, was definitely our grandparents. But there was so much of her in that house. And it's certainly been distributed to all of our houses, you know, as we sold that house and moved on from it. But in many ways, the memories that you and I have of that place, it was surrounded by her. They're just filled with her. Anything you looked at was something she had pretty much chosen to be in that house until we moved out of it. And the thing that I think I am so happy that we have carried on of hers are those puzzles. That Emily had a real love for the pastime puzzles. They were wooden puzzles with beautiful, beautiful pictures that had been painted and pressed onto them. And then they're cut into these really cool jigsaw shapes, all different stuff, little pairs and letters and numbers. And I remember there's a violin in one of them. And it's just really, really cool. And I love the fact that she not only passed on this legacy, she passed on this wonderful love for Martha's Vineyard for most of us. I don't know anybody in our family who doesn't still love the vineyard. And she also passed on this pastime to us of puzzling together. And I know there's always a puzzle going at my parents' house. I love it when you guys come down to the vineyard and I see that you've broken out a puzzle for your stay. I think it's really kind of fun to have a generational pastime that we posts to and can see. But like you, I really love that Martha's Vineyard was a place she chose, that she didn't choose it to kind of, like you say, play with society, but she was more interested in the quality of her life and the time that she spent. And I think she formed some really great friendships and had some really great routines in that particular space. And it's definitely inspirational.
I could talk about Emily Post all day. In fact, I think I'm going to go read a little bit of the Laura Claridge biography this weekend, because every time I start thinking about Emily Post, a new question or two pops up in my mind.
Well, thanks for taking some time today to share with our audience some of your favorite thoughts about her and some of your favorite memories. I know I certainly had a lot of fun talking about it. And like you, I feel a draw towards that biography now.
For anyone else interested in learning more about Emily Post, the biography that we're referencing is Emily Post, Daughter of the Gilded Age, Mistress of American Manners, and it's written by Laura Claridge, and it is without question the authoritative biography on Emily Post.
Dip the tips of your fingers into the finger bowl. It is correct to pat your lips with your moistened fingers and dry both fingers and lips with your napkin.
The land down under has never been easier to reach. United Airlines has more flights between the U.S. and Australia than any other U.S. airline, so you can fly nonstop to destinations like Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. Explore dazzling cities, savor the very best of Aussie cuisine, and get up close and personal with the wildlife. Who doesn't want to hold a koala? Go to united.com/Australia to book your adventure.
It's time for one of the new segments on our show, and I am so glad that my cousin has written in the comments of the show notes that he loves this new segment so much. We really wanted to pose to our wonderful, awesome etiquette audience a weekly etiquette challenge. And so this week, our newest little segment is going to be a challenge where we encourage you to write a thank you note this week. Even if it's not for something recent, you can write a thank you note to someone you are grateful to. It doesn't have to be for a gift necessarily, but think about something that fills you with gratitude and the person that either gave it to you or helped facilitate it. And write them a little note today. And maybe, just maybe, you can tell us about who you chose to write to and why on our Substack. Remember, the Monday podcast post has a comment thread that is open to all. Good luck writing all your thank you notes.
Before we end our show with an etiquette salute, we'd like to remind you of some ways you can help Awesome Etiquette grow. Share this episode. Sign up for a paid subscription to our Substack and get an ad-free version of the show and bonus content. Send in a question or salute. We mean it when we say there is no show without you. Try the products and services in our host-read ads.
We like to end our show on a high note, so we turn to you to hear about the good etiquette you're seeing and experiencing out in the world, and that can come in so many forms. And today, we have a salute from giveaway prize winner, Dory.
Hi, Lizzie and Dan. My awesome etiquette salute goes to my husband's family. After 3 months of dating, we traveled to another state so he could introduce me to his family. Upon my arrival, they had a bouquet of beautiful flowers and my favorite snacks and beverages waiting for me. They took the time to inquire of my then-boyfriend about my likes and dislikes and tailored meals, treats, and activities according to what they learned of me. They were genuinely solicitous and interested in discovering who I was and displayed such a loving kindness our entire multi-day visit. It was all so charming. I have never felt so welcomed, cared for, and valued by complete strangers in my life. I'm delighted to say my husband and I have been married 24 years now, and I have enjoyed a wonderful relationship with all of my in-laws, all 24 of these years, in large part due to their selfless display of kindness, consideration, and respect from day one. They deserve an awesome etiquette salute. Yours truly, Dory.
Dory, thank you so much. Dan, what really stood out to me about this particular salute was that it was a reflection on something that had happened 24 years ago. And I felt like that made a really strong impression on Dory, you know?
Anyone who ever wonders how important the little things are can just refer to this.
Dory, thank you so much for your salute.
And thank you for listening today. We really appreciate everyone who sent something into the show. You make Awesome Etiquette possible each week.
We also want to thank everyone who supports us via Substack, whether that's with a free or a paid subscription. We're loving the conversations over there. If you haven't checked it out, please come visit today by going to emilypost.substack.com.
Looking for more? We have great books that make great gifts, and you can get signed copies through Bridgeside Books. Just visit emilypost.com. There's a link from our homepage.
Thanks again for listening. Our show is edited by Chris Albertine and produced by Claire Trageser.
Thanks, Chris and Claire.
Bye, everybody.
LP 501 in the bag.
I know, cuz we did it. It felt different, but we did it.